take full responsibility for everything this government has been doing in tackling coronavirus, and I'm very proud of our record.
Tens of thousands of our citizens have died avoidably. These were unnecessary deaths because of systematic government misconduct.
With good British common sense, we will continue to defeat this virus and take this country forward.
There are a lot of green shoots of opportunity on the horizon. You know, we've been held down on the forest floor for far too long, and we will reach that canopy again.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Bloomberg Westminster, your daily guide to British politics. I'm Roger Hearing.
And I'm Caroline Hepke. Welcome to the programme. So we have a trade special for you this Friday.
Yeah, we're going to take a special look at the issue as the UK signed its first post-Brexit trade deal with a major economy, Japan. But the Japanese agreement largely preserves the terms, in fact, under which the UK traded with Tokyo as it was part of the EU. Well, earlier, the Trade Minister, Greg Hand, spoke to Bloomberg's Anna Edwards, who asked him about the benefits of the deal.
We've locked in all of the gains from the EU-Japan deal, but we've gone further in crucial areas like financial services. So financial services firms looking to operate in Japan will find it easier to get a license. It's good news for fintech firms because we've removed unnecessary data localization rules. And it's good news for business travelers. It's now easier to travel to and from Japan as business travelers. So you and I can work out that will affect a lot of firms in a very positive way, particularly in financial services, particularly in professional business services. There's also gains in agriculture and food and drink as well. So it's a very good deal for the UK. It's our first free trade agreement as an independent trading country in more than 45 years. And it's a very good thing. Liz Truss is in Tokyo at the moment, having signed the deal this morning.
In terms of the Brexit negotiations, UK companies trading with the EU are going to be facing some changes, aren't they? Whether that's customs declarations, rules of origin documents, animal health certification. Is the government going to compensate businesses for the higher costs at all?
Well, look, we're focused at the moment on making sure that businesses are ready. You're right that even with a trade deal with the European Union, which we're working to get, there will be changes on the 1st of January. The UK is leaving the customs union, it's leaving the single market. There will be changes. At the moment, we're focusing on making sure that businesses are ready for those changes that kick in on the 1st of January. That's the most important thing.
So that was the Trade Minister Greg Hands there speaking to Bloomberg's Anna Edwards just this morning. And so this UK-Japanese trade deal comes as, of course, the clock ticks down on efforts to reach an agreement with Brussels by the end of the year, which Anna and Greg were also talking about. Trade talks between the UK and the EU will continue today after the EU's chief negotiator, Michel Barnier, arrived in London yesterday.
I just think that it's very important to be back at the table. Every day counts, and we have a huge, huge common responsibility.
So that was the EU's chief negotiator, Michel Barnier.
So Brussels said both sides need to compromise on trade issues while Number 10 acknowledged significant gaps remain between the two sides. Well, for more on the whole Brexit, post-Brexit trade picture, the landscape that's there, obviously shaped to some extent by the pandemic for Britain to go into after a post-Brexit trade deal, we've been joined by Bloomberg's trade czar, Brendan Murray, and our very own Brexit editor, Ed Evans. Well, Ed, let me start with you. To what extent do you think that landscape is going to be shaped for Britain by the kind of deal it gets with Brussels? Because I guess that makes it a baseline, really, from which to work.
Yes, it's also the biggest and closest trade partner of the UK, and it's the one with the UK is probably the most deeply integrated right now. So the EU trade deal is absolutely crucial to the UK. And this week, I think it took a step forward. Obviously, this time last week, Johnson had walked away from the talks. And what we saw over the course of 3 or 4 days of intensive behind-the-scenes diplomacy was the EU gives some concessions on process. Now, it is just concessions on process. The big substantive disagreements over state aid and fisheries remain, still need to be overcome. But the two are linked. If you can actually get people around a table to talk about state aid for the first time and to actually put down on paper the deal that they're working towards, that is progress. And I think both sides, the negotiators for both sides want to get a deal. And this week, I think, got the political buy-in from their bosses that they can go ahead and negotiate a deal. They haven't got much time. It's only 3 weeks to get a deal in time for the end of the transition period. So it's going to go down to the absolute wire.
So it will go down to the wire when it comes to Brexit. Well, let's bring in Bloomberg's trade czar, Brendan Murray, with us this morning. So look, Roger mentioned the kind of broad trade landscape. Ed talked about the importance of the Brexit trade deal. How significant then is this Japanese trade deal for the UK? The country is a long way away.
Yeah, it's you know, symbolically it goes some way to, you know, to prove that the UK can do a deal with a major economy. But let's be honest, you know, it's a small trading partner for the UK. Something like 2% of UK exports go to Japan, and the economic boost is estimated to be something like less than 1/10 of a percentage point. So. Yeah, on its surface, and we'll have to, the devils are in the details on these things in terms of what the UK would have given up in their deal with the Japanese. But, you know, it's ultimately, you know, the big deals are still ahead of them with significant challenges, you know, the deals with the EU and the US.
Well, Brendan, I mean, let's widen it out. What else is there in the landscape? You mentioned briefly there the US. We'll talk about that. But more widely, are there places where the UK can go and expect a friendly reception?
Well, you know, these trade deals kind of build on each other, and every country, the next country that you go to, wants the concessions that you made previous deal, the country that you made the previous deal with. So they're all kind of connected. And so, putting the Japanese one together now in the right direction, but as I said, the real economic impact comes, with the EU and the US deal. It's still, as Ed, I think, pointed out, there's still some significant hurdles to go and a short time to get there.
Mm. So then, Ed, on that point, what do you think is the precedent that will be set then by this Brexit trade deal? Because even if there is an agreement, the terms are very kind of narrow. They largely involve trade of goods rather than services. So is that going to be quite a critical precedent, especially when we think about doing a deal with the United States?
I think in terms of the EU deal, Japan doesn't set Brendan may disagree on this, but doesn't set a particularly strong precedent. I think the talks with the EU had begun before the talks with Japan. They're two quite different markets, as Brendan points out, in terms of size and in terms of what's been, the level of integration between the two. The UK has been part of the EU single market for a generation. It is deeply intertwined with that market. And it's we're going from we are trying to get a deal that preserves trade in goods. Don't forget, financial services are left out of that, at least at the beginning, at least the first stage. They're not the two same things, I think.
Ed, one interesting line in all this is that part of the reason, or at least the subtext perhaps, behind the whole Brexit movement was a bit of freedom perhaps in terms of Britain's ability to do deals with nations which perhaps, had we remained within the EU, might have been constricted by, in some cases, ethical concerns about whether or not trade should be done. I've certainly heard Conservative MPs say, hang on, we should simply move trade out of that whole area altogether. Do you think that is part of what's going on here, and perhaps on things, I suppose, most naturally of China, there might be a more open field just because the EU isn't controlling it anymore?
Well, on China, there are very big questions. I think the EU has obviously, the UK for 40 years has basically outsourced its external trade policy to the EU, and with Brexit, it's bringing it back in. To the UK, and with that comes the choice to make deals, and that really does open up a deal with something like China, somebody like China, where there are ethical concerns, as you point out, within the Tory party. They will be debated in Parliament, and the government can expect to come under pressure on them. That's something that wasn't that political interaction just wasn't the case before Brexit. So it does change in that respect.
Brendan, I want to ask you, brass tacks, when we leave the EU, the trade deficit that the UK will have with the rest of its trading partners will grow enormously. Is there anything that is going to plug that hole, at least in the kind of short to medium term? What about the kind of US trade deal? that's going to be a significant shock come January 1st.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, in 10 or 11 days, we have the U.S. election that's going to, you know, could potentially change, the whole dynamic between Washington and London. So there's a lot to consider, especially, you know, when you think of, a second term of Donald Trump. You know, you think of someone who, likes to do his own bilateral trade deals the Prime Minister Johnson does, President Biden might take a warmer look toward Brussels and maybe take a tougher approach with the UK compared to the way Donald Trump would.
The City of London is an area that has most to lose, perhaps, and to gain in the new face of the UK out in the world, shaped, of course, as we said, by the pandemic, but also a place where Britain hopes to do a lot of good business. The public face of the city, of course, is the Lord Mayor, and I'm very pleased to say joining us now is the Lord Mayor of London, William Russell. Welcome to the programme. Let me ask you, you've been on a virtual visit, quite a strange thing, I guess, in itself, to the US and Canada this week. What did you pick up in terms of the appetite there for a post-Brexit trade deal with the UK?
So, I just did 4 days of a North American virtual trip, and I took 9 to 10 delegates with me. It was mostly around fintech, and obviously that's a big area for us. But and we were meeting with a great many of the VCs in America, Toronto. We went to various cities, and they're very upbeat about the investing in the UK. I met Capital G, which is part of Google Ventures, and then another one was TPG, and they've invested on Fido. But it was very positive. They see the ecosystem not changing. In fact, they think it's getting stronger and stronger. And there's a huge amount of capital out there wanting to invest in UK fintechs. And funny enough, some figures just came out just the other day about London is top in the world for the number of deals secured around fintech. And we've done 167 transactions in the first 9 months of 2020 compared to 107 in San Francisco and 95 in New York. So, look, it was a very positive trip.
Okay.
Although virtual, of course.
Yes, virtual. I'm sure they were also very preoccupied with the US presidential election, no doubt. How do you think that picture will actually change, though, in terms of bilateral investments and cooperation between businesses, if there is a change in the White House, a Biden presidency, obviously not aligned with the Johnson government? Obviously, that would be a left-leaning, and Johnson is right-leaning.
To be frank, the politics didn't come up. They may be preoccupied, but every single one of the VCs was much more interested in the investment opportunities here in the UK. And I don't think it will change that much. Certainly, that's the view we got from them, that they see the UK as a good place to invest. And I don't think that would change whoever wins the presidential election.
Were they concerned at all? Did they even mention Brexit and
about
the deal?
I've got to be totally honest. Mm. No, Brexit, not mentioned once. Not mentioned once. And I think this is where I come from. As far as London and its ecosystem, and we are the fintech centre of the world, that's London and the UK. We're now the green finance centre of the world. And to be frank, that's how they see us, and I genuinely don't think that will change. Look, in 2016, EY came out with a piece of research saying we'd lose 85,000 jobs in the square mile because of Brexit. Well, you know that we've lost less than 10,000 jobs, and actually we've gained jobs since 2016 in the square mile. A lot of that's been around the fintech sector. So I think sometimes it's best to look forward, not back, and everyone is pretty optimistic, including myself.
Well, having said that, looking forwards, of course, the government is meant to be debating this idea of limiting foreign ownership of businesses in the UK, or at least having the ability to retroactively unpick deals if they are against the national interest. That could certainly bring a kind of new level of oversight by the government, even if it doesn't specifically apply perhaps to US businesses. It's certainly quite a new tack in terms of doing deals.
Look, there are going to be certain sectors that the government will look at, and as you know, we'll see what they come up with. But we, you know, I still believe, and you've seen today, a Lone Star are looking at I think it's McCarthy and Stone. I mean, there's some great assets here, and there may be different views in different sectors and around security, etc. But I think we know what I say about the City of London is we're free, open, trading, business centre. And that will continue.
Let me ask you about the wider consideration, apart from just the US. Obviously, there's a huge world out there that the government very much like us all to be out building trade deals with. But there are issues, because, as various people have pointed out, one of the big trade deals could be perhaps with China. But that doesn't seem very likely at the moment, because our relationship with China, partly for ethical reasons, partly for political reasons, is a little strained. How far should ethics dictate who we trade with?
Well, I mean, a lot of the time that's for individual companies and governments to decide upon, not for me to necessarily say anything about that. But I come back to the point that we are a free trading marketplace, not dissimilar to our friends across the Atlantic in America. And I'm sure you've noticed how many deals have been done in the last 6 months in financial services in China by U.S. firms, despite the rhetoric coming out of the White House. We can go through them, whether it's JP Morgan, BlackRock, Vanguard, Fidelity, are all looking at deals. So I think that, you know, those, as the city's concerned and financial services, the opportunity in China is enormous. And it's up to the individual companies and countries to decide on the ethics side.
Okay. Given your standing, your reach, you must have a personal view on this idea. I mean, China, our relationship there and our relationship with many countries around the world is now in question and sort of up for grabs as we move into this completely new era.
Well, I mean, it's a new era. I mean, as you said at the beginning, I'm the face for financial professional services for the UK that employs 2.3 million people. And I'm doing my bit to represent them and help on trade deals. And look, I mean, we just had some great news today from Japan with a FTA agreement, and that covers a huge amount around data provision, financial services. And I'm sure you knew this, but 28% of all our UK exports to Japan are in financial services. So as far as we're concerned at the city, there is another a positive trade deal, and hopefully more to come.
But I'm sorry to press you on this, William, but I think it is important. I mean, you as you say, the public face of the City of London. The City of London does thrive on its reputation for honesty, due diligence, and also for not being necessarily averse to looking at the records of the countries with which people trade. Surely you must feel that there is a position to take in terms of ethics when it comes to deals. You wouldn't be happy, I imagine, dealing with companies or indeed countries that, for example, are homophobic, racist, sexist. I mean, the list could go on.
As I said, I mean, I'm the representative. It's up to individual companies and when you were referring to countries to make their decisions on that. We'll leave it at that.
How much then do you, I mean, I know that the government is interested in sort of championing the free trade deal with Japan, but let's be realistic. This is not going to move the needle when it comes to UK growth. And even though it has, perhaps will benefit a couple of fintech companies, this kind of deal is more about the kind of visible politics than it is about the economics.
Well, I mean, as I said, I'm a member of the Board of Trade. We aren't involved in the EU deal. We all know that the EU deal is the largest of the deals, and they're talking as at the moment. But on the other countries, you know, I think Japan is a great start. Hopefully, we'll have Australia, New Zealand, other nations to follow, and you know. We're keen for a deal with the EU too. And that is something which, from our perspective, and as you know, I work very closely with the Chairman of Policy, Catherine McGuinness, and we both agree that we do want a financial services deal with the EU. So fingers crossed that something comes of that. And if we don't have a deal, that's not good. But many of the businesses in the Square Mile are ready and prepared. And coming back to my initial comments, you know, I'm still optimistic even if that happens, because we have this incredible ecosystem full of huge amounts of talent. And London is a great place to live. A cultural and the arts and everything, you know, that is here only helps us attract that talent.
What about moving away from big free trade deals, headline grabbers, in a way, to perhaps more individual arrangements to do with issues like passporting, but ways of the financial services in particular can go through and make sure they can work even if these massive trade deals don't exist? Is that a good way forward?
I mean, it may be. I mean, it's something that you know, we're from the city's perspective, we're very innovative, very flexible, and we'll look at things that work best for financial services. So we're open to many different ideas in that area.
Given the challenges of the pandemic, obviously, the government is under a great deal of pressure right now. How much are they listening to what the City of London is saying? How open are the lines of communication, really?
Okay, well, I'll give you an example. The lines are open, and they are listening. And one of the things I've been working on with a number of people is how we can get more listings on the London Stock Exchange rather than going to NASDAQ or to the New York Stock Exchange. And government's listening and Treasury's listening. And we're hoping that, you know, there's some great companies potentially in the next 12 to 18 months that could list here, you know, whether and Deliveroo, whatever. I mean, there are others that could list here as well. And, you know, there's a really good pipeline. But what we need to do is work on how we can keep those companies listed here. And one of the other things we're working on, government, which I feel really strongly about, and I'm sure you know this, but, you know, our pension funds it's only 5% of all the pension funds can invest in sort of private equity investments. And that's something where we need to look at that growth capital, which, to be frank, having just done this North American virtual trip, that growth capital is taken up by our friends in America.
Bloomberg Westminster. Listen weekdays at noon on DAB Digital Radio in London.